Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Today, a college senior's attempt to be a better healthcare consumer exposes wild inconsistencies in pricing and transparency for a popular medical procedure. And Capote gets a fact check. A Wall Street Journal investigation reveals factual discrepancies and favoritisms in Cold Blood. Also today, New Hampshire's own Disney princess, a lady from the Lakes region, finds magic on the ice. But first, we begin with a proposal for the post office, where a snow, rain, and gloom of night cannot stop the mail. Changing communication habits, competition, and hefty debt are making things pretty tough for the United States Postal Service. The recent decision to suspend Saturday mail delivery beginning this summer drew howls from union reps and some Democrats on the Hill, and barely registered a shrug from mostly urban Americans. Freelance writer David Dayan has a proposal for the USPS, which is the country's second largest employer. Get back in the business of banking. His article for the Pacific Standard has been picked up by sites from Salon to Rural News. David Dayan, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me, Virginia.
So how bad off is the USPS, and how'd it get into this mess?
Well, I mean, I guess it's easy to blame Congress, but in this case, it does apply. In 2006, Congress passed a law that, among other things, forced the USPS to pre-fund 75 years of their employee retirement benefits. There's no public agency or private company that ever has to do such a thing, and it really has hurt the bottom line of the USPS. They posted a $1.3 billion loss in the last quarter, but it would have been a profit if they didn't have to make these consistent payments to pre-fund the system. Now, that's the short-term answer. Over the long term, as you said, the changing nature of communication, online bill pay, email, has disrupted the large volume that post office normally takes in, and so there are options for changes so they can increase their revenue.
But your idea is to bring back postal banking, something that people used to do at the PO. How did that work?
Yeah, when I first looked into this a couple of years ago, I didn't realize that in 1911, the U.S. Post Office had what that was called the Postal Savings System, and it was basically sort of a certificate of deposit where you would give in some money to the post office and you would draw a 2% return on your investment and get a deposit slip, and it sort of operated in that fashion. I think there's the opportunity, and we see this all over the world, actually, in several countries in Europe and Asia, to have a sort of public option for simple banking, which is, you know, savings account, maybe a checking account, ATM services, things of that nature, that I believe the post office would be well equipped to do. They have great locations. They have window service already set up. They already do postal money orders. There are a lot of reasons why the infrastructure is already in place. And the most important thing is that it would really protect Americans who are unbanked, who don't have access to the financial system, not to get ripped off by financial predators, places like check cashing outlets and money, the payday lenders and things like that.
So the unbanked or the underbanked, who are often the most vulnerable, I guess, in our financial system now, what kind of services could they do at this new postal store for a bank front, and what could they not do? What would be the limits here?
Well, obviously there's no legislation that's been written, but in my mind...
In the world of David Dayan.
In the world of David Dayan, you would do sort of simple banking. You're not looking to get mortgages out of the post office or derivatives or any of these larger banking services, but things that, like ATM services, like a checking account, a savings account, things that are pretty manageable in terms of the ability for the post office to do it, and things that would really help people who otherwise get marked up large, massive fees from these alternative financial services and don't have the ability to carry the minimum balances or pay the fees of the traditional banking system. So there's really a large segment of people. I mean, the FDIC report showed that 10 million households are unbanked, and another 24 million are underbanked, which is they have a bank account, but they typically use these alternative financial services all the way up to pawn shops. So there's a substantial share of the market, if you will, that you could get from a public option for simple banking that would foster competition and hopefully protect people from financial predation.
Yeah, we've got 32,000 storefronts already set up. This may be one of the reasons, David, why your article's getting picked up all over the place for discussion. Now, I also was reading today about federal benefits will be paid electronically to people beginning on March the 1st of this year. So this is Social Security, disability.
Right.
How would this work together?
Well, you could envision that going right into your postal bank account. This innovation with electronic delivery of these kinds of benefits, usually there's a third party involved in that, and that's usually a large bank, and they take a piece of the action. So I think that first of all, the post office would probably be able to take less of a piece of the action, and that would help the U.S. finances, number one. And number two, it being a federal service, you could see it working together a lot more smoothly, where you don't have the intrusion of this third-party financial institution that's getting involved in this. But it certainly could work very easily, and your money would be wired to your postal banking account, and then you could access it at any of the thousands and thousands of postal banking operations all over the country.
David, just a minute left, but that's one of the things I was wondering about. Like you said, a lot of other countries use this model. I'm wondering about, you know, banking is very competitive here in the U.S. Would there have to be one bank that gets the account for all of these storefronts, or can it be wired to people's individual banks?
Yeah, I mean, you could see the emergence of some back end logistics helped on helping the post office along with this through the a traditional bank. Really, you have to envision this as the competitor to this, not necessarily being the banking system. If the banking system wanted to capture all these unbanked Americans, they certainly could change their practices. The real competitor here is these alternative financial services, which are notorious for ripping off their customers and making a lot of markup because these people are so vulnerable and they don't have access to any other services. If you introduce competition into that, I think that you kill two birds with one stone. You help the post office gain a little bit of revenue to help their bottom line, and you also protect these individuals who otherwise, have a lot of problems in terms of dealing with these services.
Well, David, it sounds like a pretty good world to live in. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Virginia.
David Day, and he's a blogger, freelance writer. His work has appeared in the Pacific Standard, where we found his article, Signed, Sealed, Deposited. You can read it yourself at wordofmouthradio.org.